You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is the Maria Sanchez Show, and thank you for joining us. We're live. It's July 15th, Monday, and it's 9 o'clock Pacific. We're live every Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Pacific. You can listen at latalkradio.com, channel 2, and then later on the day, we post the podcast to mariasanchezshow.com and latalkradio.com as well, so you can listen on demand, and you can also catch us on iTunes and on Stitcher. So there's a bunch of good news today. Yay. What a great way to start a week with good news. On the program, though, we have somebody visiting with us who's going to talk to us about this phenomenon known as crowdsourcing and crowdfunding. And it's how you can start or grow a business through other folks and getting rewards and donations and stuff. And it's out there and thought, well, let's find out what it's all about. And then Legally Blonde, the musical, is opening this Friday, July 19th at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. So we're going to talk with the director about that. And if we have time, we've got a guest that would like to visit with us about the George Zimmerman verdict over the weekend, which I'm sure everybody's been talking about all day Sunday. The only thing I'm going to say about that is in the articles that we read, there's something that came out today that they say that he said over the weekend that George Zimmerman would like to go to law school. He'd like to help other people like me, he said. But what I had never read before is there was this couple that was a defense witness, John Donnelly and his wife, Leanne Benjamin. They got to know George Zimmerman in 2004 when he and a black friend opened up an insurance office in a Florida building where Leanne Benjamin worked. They grew close, and the couple spent time with him during the trial. So that was something I had never heard of. And then there was something else that they said, and this is in Reuters, which is a UK source. I always like to go to foreign sources to see what they're saying about our news. And there's a quote from a friend of his that says that George has been mentoring young black kids for years. He launched a campaign to help a homeless black man who was beaten up by a white kid. So that's stuff that I hadn't heard and all the reporting that was done. So on to the good news. Citicorp today reported a stronger than expected 26% rise in adjusted quarterly profit. They're saying the stronger home prices reduced the losses on their mortgage. It also underscores how the bank is returning to normal after getting hit during the financial crisis and needing three government rescues. So Citi shares have risen about 28% this year through Friday's close, and they have doubled in value in the past year. And before we get to some more good news, yesterday's good news, the 8th annual Heels and Wheels motorcycle ride to raise money for Community Memorials Hospital's Breast Center was a huge success. We had nearly 200 riders, all women, all kinds, and some of the gals even had a woman behind them. And we had, I think, about, I want to say, almost 45 walk-ups that registered yesterday on site. And if you had pre-registered for $30, $10 of your registration fee went to the Breast Center, in addition to the ride, a T-shirt, and lunch, and then raffle prizes and stuff. If you were late, the late registering, which was last week, it was for $40. 15 of that went to the Breast Center at Community Memorial Hospital. So congratulations to the Ventura Harley-Davidson motorcycle dealership. Tracy was, she did a great job. Her committee, there were 22 gals that worked on it. They did a great job. Posted some pictures on Facebook of the, some of the riders were breast cancer survivors themselves, so they got honored to a standing ovation. That was really touching. And we're going to get the final tallies to you about how much money was raised, but about $30,000 in the past 3 years has gone to the Breast Center. So that's not a trifling. That's a lot, and I think that's just fabulous. And to see women. So I am currently without a Harley. I bought a 2006 1200 Sportster custom low in 2007. And I bought that in June of 07. And in August, I went to Sturgis for the world's largest motorcycle rally. And I actually broadcast, I had a morning drive radio program at that time from Sturgis every morning. And Sturgis is an hour ahead of us here on the Pacific time. So ordinarily I was on the air from 6 to 9 a.m. and in Sturgis I was on from 7 to 10 a.m. So that meant that I got to sleep in. So that was kind of fun. And we were staying in Spearfish, which is about 29 miles outside the town of Sturgis. So I'd ride my Harley into where I had set up the studios, which was at the Buffalo Chip Camp, which is the third largest city in South Dakota for 10 days a year. That's how many people go there. It's like, I don't know how many acres, and they've got 19 bars, and they've got RV, tenting, camping, swimming pools, and then they have amazing concerts every night. And I mean like ZZ Top and Black Cherry and Velvet Revolver and all, just awesome talent. And I was on the air, as I said, from 7 to 10 a.m. every morning there, and I'd be stepping out when we were doing the news so I could just, you know, catch a breath of fresh air or something, and I'd watch these tour buses pull up. I'll never forget, I saw ZZ Top pull up. They had three or four motorhomes, you know, huge buses, and then it's got their equipment, and the roadies, they start taking things out and setting things up, and these guys are bleary-eyed. They're from, you know, passing out from the bus itself, like food stains on their shirts. There's nothing glamorous about touring. I really admire the stamina that it must take to do it. So we broadcast from there. It took me about a half an hour to get in. The sun was coming up. It was quiet, 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 quiet. And then I'm done with my show at 10 o'clock, and I'm riding back to Spearfish to meet my group so that we can go on rides, because that's the whole point about going there is the day rides. And it would take me an hour and a half to get back, because Sturgis is this little bitty town that has 6,000 people in it ordinarily, and then you get all these bikers in it. You never get out of first gear. In fact, you're walking your bike most of the time through town, because there's a stop light or sign at every intersection, and you've got bikes backed up. So it's quite the experience. So I had that, I called her Genevieve. She was my first Harley. And why did I call her Genevieve? Because I wanted to name my daughter Catherine Genevieve, and I was overruled by my ex-husband and her brothers. So I've always had a penchant for the name. And the backstory is that Catherine took Genevieve as her confirmation name, which was really sweet. I was very touched by that. So Genevieve was, she was a good girl and she was good to me. So last year, last August, I went with nine guys and rode 3,600 miles in 10 days on Genevieve to go to Sturgis again in 2012. And I got back and the guys are like, Maria, you need a bigger bike. You know, you can't keep this up. You got pegs. You don't have bags. You don't have, there's not a cup holder. There's, you know, blah, blah. And I, all right. So I go to the dealership and I bought a Street Glide last year, 2012. And it was a mistake. It was too big for me. So I'm telling you this because I sold it in April and we called her Genevieve 2, or they started to call her affectionately G2. So I'm without a ride, without a Harley for the first time since 2007. So I was going to borrow my first Genevieve because I sold it to a buddy of mine who's in my Rotary, and he said that he was out of town and so he couldn't help me. So I called Tracy at the dealership on Saturday. I was like, Tracy, are you going crazy? And she's like, no, things are good. And I said, cool. I'm without a bike. I don't have a bike. And she goes, Maria, no problem. We're going to lend you one. So they lent me a Sportster yesterday. And, you know, getting on a new bike and never having been on it and stuff, it's pretty much the same. Nevertheless, I was a little, like, for about the first mile, like a little trepidatious, and then it was perfectly fine. And it felt so great to be back on a bike that I felt like I could control. Only problem is that I put sunscreen on my face because I'm very fair and I burn easily. And I left my home yesterday morning at about 7:30, I think, because registration was at 8:30. I wanted to be there to help. I had on a long sleeve t-shirt from Sturgis. And then when I got to the dealership in Camarillo, I put on the t-shirt that comes with the ride. And so my arms were exposed to the sun, and I am like lobster red. And the worst is that when you ride a bike, the inside of your elbows is exposed to the sun, and that's not ordinarily the case. And so that is, not only is it bright red, it's amazingly swollen. So I paid the price, but I'm happy to do it. Tracy was kind enough to let me address the gals a couple of times, and I said to them, we're hovering around 200, and I said, next year, we've got to hit 250, and then the 10th year, we've got to hit into the 300 and 400s, because we can do great things. One gal flew in from Texas to be on the ride. If you're from Southern California, there were gals that rode down from Santa Maria on Saturday night, they made that their girls' night, and then they were there for the ride on Sunday. There were folks that, women that came from Indio, that's in the desert, from Orange County, from Santa Barbara. So it has quite the pull. So it's really, really, really cool, and it's so heartwarming. And that is on the heels of today. Former President George H.W. Bush is going to be at the White House to join President Obama, because they're honoring a couple who deliver meals to children in a bid to fight hunger. And this is part of the Daily Point of Light Award, which former President George H.W. Bush started. He called volunteers in service to their communities 1,000 points of light in his 1989 inaugural address. And he went on to award the first Daily Point of Light Awards to honor citizens who make a difference through their volunteer work. So that was a nice way to get back into the good news. So the Points of Light Foundation is now the world's largest service organization coordinating volunteer products. President Bush serves as the nonpartisan nonprofit foundation's honorary chair, and his son, Neil Bush, is the president of the organization. So today's award that is going to this couple, Floyd Hammer and Kathy Hamilton, they're from Iowa. They started a hunger combating group called Outreach after they made a trip to Tanzania, and they're receiving today the 5,000th Daily Point of Light Award. So they're saying that the 89-year-old president has been battling health problems. He has a form of Parkinson's that affects his legs and requires him to use a wheelchair. And he's going to be giving that. So we make a difference. Each and every one of us do. So now we're going to speak with Kendall Almerico. He is a crowdfunding expert and CEO of Click Start Me. And we're going to learn about crowdsourcing.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Kendall Almerico.
Kendall Almerico, this is Maria Sanchez. Good morning. You're live on the air. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Maria. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome, and I'm really curious, before we get into your entity, ClickStart Me, and I know that your folks are calling it crowdfunding, and I also hear it's termed crowdsourcing, and I'm curious if you can give us the history of it, how it came about, and how people can avail themselves of it.
Sure. Well, you know, crowdfunding and crowdsourcing, people use those terms interchangeably, although I guess technically crowdsourcing tends to be when you get people to not financially get involved in something. I think that's the way most people in the business distinguish it. Is, for example, if you're looking for volunteers to be in a music video and you say, I'm opening this up and we're going to bring in all kinds of people and they're going to show up to be in my music video, you're not getting paid to be in it. That would be crowdsourcing for the music video. But crowdfunding would be putting up a project online and saying, I need to raise money to hire the crew, to hire this, the editors, the lighting, and what have you. People donate, and the donations then allow you to create the video. I think that's probably the distinction that most people use. But the real question, Maria, is where did it come from? And crowdfunding and crowdsourcing, they've both been around forever. I mean, if anyone has ever been into a church and watched them pass the collection plate, you know, everybody putting in a dollar here, a dollar there, $5 here, and $5 there, at the end of the day, they've collected a lot of money. That's crowdfunding. What's made it explode into the national media and become something that's something of a phenomenon is that now people are doing it online. And rather than the collection plate going around when someone needs to raise money for the church or everyone going around to their friends and saying, hey, can you give me a little bit of money? I need to start a new business. You're now allowed to go online through a crowdfunding site like ClickStartMe or any of our competitors, put a project online, and anybody online can contribute to what you're trying to do. A lot of money, a little bit at a time from a lot of people or the crowd. That's what crowdfunding is.
Now, is it indeed a donation and you don't expect to get the money back?
People call it a donation. People call it a contribution. What you're generally doing is you're giving money in exchange for some type of a reward, as we call it. It's rewards-based crowdfunding is sort of the technical term. But when someone donates money to a crowdfunding project, they typically get something in return. And I'll give you an example. Let's say someone has invented a brand new app for a phone, and they just need the money to develop it to the last stage and then get it into the app stores so that people can buy it. So they say, I need to raise $10,000 through my crowdfunding project. Well, they could say in the project, for example, for every $25 that's donated, I will give you a free copy of the app once it comes out. Or for $100, I will buy you an iPhone and put the app on it. So there's typically something in exchange for the donation, although sometimes it may be something just as simple as, I'm going to thank you on my Facebook page, or I'm going to send you a thank you card or a thank you note. It's always some type of a reward, and no, people aren't expecting to get the money back. It's not like you're buying equity in a business. It's not like you're buying stock in the business. That's still not allowed under the law in the United States, but it's going to change very soon.
And change how?
Well, the SEC is right now writing new rules that are going to allow, under a law that was passed in 2012 called the Jobs Act, which is short for Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act. The SEC is now writing rules that is going to allow, probably sometime early next year, for businesses to actually raise money through crowdfunding online and sell stocks, sell equity in the business. In other words, if you wanted to start a business, let's say you wanted to start a restaurant. Right now, under rewards-based crowdfunding, you can raise money. People donate $25, you give them a gift certificate for a free meal, or they donate $1,000, you name your lasagna after them on the menu. You can give away pretty much anything you want, but you can't sell part of the restaurant to them. Under equity-based crowdfunding, which is going to be legal next year, you're going to be able to say, I need to raise $100,000 to start this restaurant. I'm selling 10% of the restaurant, the stock for the business, online through crowdfunding. You can buy a share for $100 or $50 or whatever the case may be. That's going to be legal next year. Right now, it's not.
Kendall, what is the accountability to now the rewards or the offers and then next year to the equity? I would imagine with all the bad things that go on the internet, and you just won this and that and the other, that there are going to be people that don't have integrity and that won't follow up with what they promised.
Absolutely. And that's with rewards-based crowdfunding in particular, that is a potential problem. With equity-based crowdfunding, because it's still going to be selling a security, you're still selling something, there's going to be regulations that pretty much will probably avoid that being a major problem. Right now, even though equity or rewards-based crowdfunding has been around for 3 years, there's been very, very few examples of any kind of fraud going through it.
Really?
But there is an accountability. Yeah, it's surprisingly, and I'll tell you why. When you think about it, Maria, here's the thing. In order to put up a project on any kind of crowdfunding website like our site or any of them, there's a vetting process that goes on. You know, someone has to come in. They have to show that they're a real person. They have to have a PayPal account, which means that they have to have a bank account attached to it. They go in front of the public and they present what they're trying to raise money for. Typically, if it looks fishy, if you can't find this person online anywhere, if they don't have a Facebook page, for example, and you can't see who they are, if they don't put a video on their project where they're sitting there talking to you saying, I'm Kendall Almirico and I'm explaining to you what I'm going to be doing with this money, if they don't have a business plan, if they don't have something there that gives you some kind of comfort level to give them money, what typically happens is no one gives them money. They don't raise any money. The crowd sort of weeds out those people. Now, is it possible that a super con man could come on and put up a fabulous-looking project and raise mm-hmm. money? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, inevitably, that's going to happen. Has it happened yet? There literally has not been a single instance of it that's occurred where they've done this and gotten away with it.
I'm shocked, and I'm actually delighted to have you make that statement. Because it seems, you know, when people are hacking in and they're getting your IDs and there's all that stuff that people do, and I always think, geez, these people have such brilliant minds. Why don't they use it for good things? You know, solve wars and hunger and poverty.
Well, you know what's so funny about that, Maria? I mean, think about it. First of all, the concept of giving money to someone and getting, you know, in exchange, the promise that something's going to happen in the future. Hey, when I make this product, you're going to get it, which a lot of crowdfunding is. Hey, I've invented this really, really cool new watch. It's going to take me 6 months to produce it. Look, here's the prototype. Here's a video. Here's the production facility. But I want you to give me $100 now. You're not going to get this for 6 months. You're asking a lot of people. I mean, people don't typically want to give money for something that doesn't exist. So in order to get people over that hump to where they want to give the money, you have to do a pretty convincing job, and people are going to vet you. They're going to do it on their own. I mean, the crowd really does weed out the fraud in these cases. And again, that's not to say someone's not going to be able to pull it off and really, you know, pull off this magnificent fraud, but if they do, they're going to be very recognizable. People are going to be able to find them, and they're going to go to jail. So, you know, it's not like you can just anonymously hide and say, send me money. I have this really cool invention that nobody's seen and nobody knows who you are. That crowdfunding doesn't work that way. No one will donate money to those people.
So tell me, in terms of crowdfunding, Kendall, what is your experience with the entities that have been very successful?
Well, in you know, the number one crowdfunding site out there, the one that sort of started this whole what is now literally a phenomenon online, is Kickstarter, and that's the one that most people have heard of. And Kickstarter really got their big boost because they had an invention that was on the site that was a watch called the Pebble Watch. And real early on in 2009, these folks that invented this watch that syncs up with your iPhone, and it's a really cool little gadget, they said, hey, we need to raise $100,000 to produce this really cool watch. We have a prototype. They made a really cool video. They put it out there. Well, it was so cool, and people liked it so much that they got $10 million in funding. I mean, literally, people $100 at a time. They sold 10,000 of these things. It was phenomenal. They raised $10 million. Well, wow. All of a sudden, everybody, the Wall Street Journal's going, "What the heck is this? Where did this come from?" You know, and there's articles all over the place, and it gave this major boost to what was initially the first website to do this. So since then, everybody thinks, well, this is easy. I can just go online and go to Kickstarter or ClickStartMe or any of the other sites, and I'm just going to put up a project and people are going to throw money at me. Well, it's not that easy. It's a job. It's work. You have to create a video. You have to be able to have something that people want to fund. You have to promote it. You need to go to your social media, and you need to go out there and promote it yourself. You need to get the media involved. There's a process here. It's not easy. It's not simple. But it does work, and when it's something good, it works very often.
So let's then get into ClickStartMe, which you're the CEO of. How do you work, and do you differ from Kickstarter or other ones?
Well, every site has little idiosyncrasies. A Kickstarter, for example, they tend to be more of the artsy type. You know, we're going to fund a movie. We're going to fund a video. Those types of things. They do some inventions, but Kickstarter doesn't want anything to do with people starting a business. They don't want you to raise money to start a restaurant, for example, or to start your own, you know, whatever business it may be. Kickstarter also is an all or nothing deal. If you don't raise the money that you're trying to raise, you don't get any of it. The money goes back to the donors. Now, in ClickStartMe's case, we will allow anybody, once they go through our vetting process, to go on site and raise money for pretty much anything, starting a business, funding a personal need, funding a charitable need, anything that they want to do, a lot of things that Kickstarter doesn't do. And on our site, it's not an all or nothing situation. Whatever money is raised, the person who creates the project keeps the money. So there's a couple of big differences there. And the one biggest difference of all is that next year, when the equity crowdfunding becomes legal, when you're allowed to sell equity in your business and actually sell stock in a business, ClickStartMe is going to allow that to happen on our site, whereas Kickstarter has come out and said, we're not going to do that.
And why wouldn't they?
Well, it's not their model. You know,
okay.
It's it's just not their business model. I mean, they're very successful at what they do. They don't have any interest in going into a whole new world that's going to be different. I mean, quite frankly, you're talking about securities regulations and a lot of legal mumbo jumbo that's going to have to be dealt with. I'm a lawyer by trade. I'm used to dealing with these things, so it doesn't bother me. But you're asking them to go from something in the rewards-based world, which is just very simple and straightforward, into something that involves a whole lot of federal regulation, state regulations, that probably for them isn't worth the headache to change their business model.
Now, since you mentioned state and federal regulations, who governs a startup? Is it the state that they reside in or the state that they're going to do business in? Or how does that work? Do you know?
Well, it'll be both. First of all, if you're talking about in the equity crowdfunding world when it becomes legal, the first line of defense will be the federal government and the Securities Exchange Commission, the SEC, because they're the ones who regulate any type of sale of any type of securities, stock ownership in a business under certain parameters. But every state also has their own rules. Mm-hmm. So anyone who comes on and decides, for example, you're in California, I'm in Florida, if someone was starting a business here in Florida, it was a Florida corporation or a Florida limited liability company, you'd have to comply with the Florida laws in addition to the federal laws. If you're in California and registered as a California LLC or what have you, you would have to comply with the California laws also. So it's no different than starting any other business or forming any other corporation. The only difference is that now you're going to have the SEC saying you're allowed to actually do this, which is illegal at this point, but won't be next year.
So does somebody, I know everyone's got ideas, but not everybody is sophisticated. So do you suggest that they get guidance with attorneys? Because you're talking about video, so that means that you have to have a professional entity for that. It sounds like there is some money that you're going to have to be pulling out of your own pocket. You're not just starting from donations.
I will tell you this. If you're going to start a business with the equity-based crowdfunding next year, you need to have some legal help involved at some level, just as you would any business that you're starting. Mm-hmm. With rewards-based crowdfunding, people put up videos that are made on their iPhones. People put up videos that are made on home video cameras and are very successful at times. Now, I will tell you, the better the video, the more compelling, the more people are going to believe that you're able to actually follow through on what you're doing. So a professionally made or a very well-made video tends to work a lot better than someone holding up their cell phone, taking a selfie and talking into it. But I've seen both work. It's kind of amazing. Generally, it's really just a combination of, is the idea good and is the person, do they seem honest and do they check out? And so, yeah, I've actually seen relatively bad videos that were made for nothing still raise a lot of money, despite the fact that it was made, with somebody just sticking their iPhone on a table and talking into it.
Have there been any studies about the demographics of the folks that get involved, not with the offerings, but the people who actually fund it?
Study-wise, there's because it's a pretty new, this is a relatively new phenomenon out there, and it's a relatively new industry. There's some numbers out there that are interesting. I think that the grand majority of the funding tends to come from higher income people in some cases. But it depends on what the job, what the funding project is. For example, there was the Veronica Mars crowdfunded movie that's going to be coming out. It was raised, I think, $5 million. Veronica Mars, I never saw the show, but apparently it was a very popular television show, had a big fan base, got canceled on television. The producers of the TV show said, hey, we're going to crowdfund a movie. We need to raise a couple million dollars to do the movie. They raised $5 million, but the people that contributed to that were across all socioeconomic backgrounds because they were people who were fans of the television show. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do. So it depends on what it is that's being funded. I think if you looked at project by project, you would not be surprised at the type of people that would fund it. If it's something that's a real high-end, scientific-looking thing, you probably have more higher educated people doing it. We had a film that was funded on our site that was done about gang warfare in South Carolina by a super nice kid who was involved in gang warfare. He was in gangs from the time he was a kid, got out of it, went to college, went to film school, made a documentary that won some awards and was making a second documentary. This is a kid who came from nothing and really didn't have a lot of money even after his first successful film, But he's out there crowdfunding his second film, and the donations to his second film typically came from lower socioeconomic groups, people that were interested in the project. So it really does depend on a project-by-project basis, Maria, to really see, you know, where the money's coming from.
It's just fascinating because it seems to me like it's the power of the people in a good way in general, because it's not about a sham. It's not about somebody being gypped or whatever. And as you said, if you do your due diligence to some extent, you know what you're getting into. I like it also because it seems to be fairly altruistic.
Yes,
you're getting a reward on some end or whatever, but really, if this is a perfect stranger and you're pulling money out of your pocket to help them with their dream or their desire,
right,
or their goal or whatever. So I'm all about good news as often or as much as possible, which is why this was fascinating to me. So is there a way, because I've been to your site and I've been to the others, and it seems like you have to start right away. There's not a whole lot of information. Unless you go through the process, is that how you get informed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that we try to do and to distinguish ClickStartMe from other sites is we realized real early on that a lot of people feel just like you. Wow, how do I even start this? How do I do this? And, our site was built so that once you start the process, it just walks you through every step, literally, like fill in this blank, fill in this form, fill in this, fill in that. But we also take a very hands-on approach. I mean, we invite everybody when they start the process to directly, I get on the phone and our team gets on the phone with people all the time and walk them through exactly what they should do to have the best level of success. I mean, we have probably 20 or 30 blogs and instructional videos on our site that walk people through pretty much every step that can be done, because it's not an intuitive process. You know,
right,
it's not something that everyone just knows how to do. We get a lot of projects that come in looking horrible and I know aren't going to work, but, you know, a week later after we've gotten with them, talked to them on the phone, helped them fix this and fix that, they turn into beautiful projects. It just takes someone who actually understands the process from beginning to end to kind of walk them through, and a lot of sites don't do that.
My other question is, how does somebody know how much money they're going to need?
Well, that's always the biggest and hardest question for people. Typically, people come in, and that's one of the first things they ask. And the first thing I say, well, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish with this? I mean, if you've done your work before you started the process, and you say, hey, I've invented this brand new, it's the coolest light bulb in the world, and it's going to change the world. And I've been to this manufacturer, and I've created a prototype, and they've told me that in order to manufacture this, I need to raise $30,000 to start the process of getting the first batch of these out there, you've done your work. You've created a prototype. You've done the research. You've looked into it. You've spoken to manufacturers. You've done it. A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people come to the site and they say, I think I'm going to try this. I want to raise $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, that's where the vetting process comes in. And when you, as a potential consumer, Maria, look at this and say, am I going to give this person money? And you go, well, they don't say anything about what they're going to do with the money. They don't seem to have thought this through. They haven't been to the manufacturer. They haven't created a prototype. Those are the types of projects that typically don't get donations. So the crowd really works, but figuring out that number, it's no different than anything else. If you are getting ready to go out and buy a car, you've got to figure out how much you can afford. If you're going mm-hmm. to start a business, you figure out what you need to start that business. It's just that same process of thinking it through and doing your homework before you start getting on there and saying, I'm going to raise money, because if you didn't do your homework, chances are the crowd's not going to fund.
And anything else you'd like to add, Kendall? You've been very informative. Thank you so much. And I like your enthusiasm. You can feel it.
I appreciate it. I really am passionate about this. I mean, I've been through the economic decline that we've all been through with the world here and the banks not loaning money and not helping people. And this was our way of giving people a chance to do things. And in fact, you're going to love this. And about, hopefully by the end of the week, we're getting ready to launch the sister site to ClickStartMe, which is going to be called Crowd It Forward. And it's going to be all altruistic stuff. We actually have called this, my tagline for it is Random Acts of Crowdfunding, where we're actually going out and finding people that deserve, that have done good things, people that have helped people, people that are out there that are the good people in the world. And we're not waiting for somebody to put the projects up. We're going to create crowdfunding projects to help those people out, people that are in need, people that deserve a break, people that have done good things and haven't been rewarded. That's what the new site's going to be all about. It's a companion site that I've been excited about from the beginning, and we just got our certification from the IRS to be a 501c3, meaning all the donations to it will be tax deductible for everybody. So literally that just came in this week, and that's the only thing we've been waiting for, and that's going to be another fun ride too.
Yay, that sounds fabulous. Good job.
Yeah,
there was a story
about love it.
Over the weekend at a Heavenly Donuts in the United States, some gal paid it forward because the Friday somebody had paid it forward for her. So
right.
For the entire day, 55 customers went through the drive-thru and each one paid for the next order. And they were asked, why did it stop? And they said, because there was nobody behind the last car.
That's great. See, those are the kinds of people we're going out and actively, we're not even asking, you know, saying, hey, we want you to be a part of this. We're just going to do it and say, you know, this lady started this. She deserves a little something. Hey, maybe we'll raise $500 and send her on a vacation or something. You know, I mean, just little fun things like that where people actually want to reward people for doing good deeds. And then also people that are really in need, you know, victims of the Boston bombings or things like that that come up when they come up. This will be a centralized place where people will be able to go to do donations that will then be taken into the right hands of people by people that care.
Excellent. If I can help you with that, promoting it, I'd love to do that, Kendall.
I'd love to be back on when it launches, and I will certainly get back in touch with you so we can do that.
Perfect. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate your information. Thank you, Kendall.
Thank you, Maria. Take care.
You too. Kendall Almerco, who is also an attorney, a sports agent, an author, and the CEO of Click Start Me, and distinguishing between what crowdsourcing is, which I always go to Merriam-Webster.com when I'm looking for anything. I was reading an article this morning, and the author said feckless, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to double check that I understand what that means. So I entered in crowdfunding into the Merriam-Webster, so I'm going to have to tell Peter when we speak with him next month, Peter Sokolowski, who's the editor-at-large or in-chief, I forget, that it said no such word. And then it said, did you mean crowdsourcing? So what Kendall just described is crowdsourcing has been typically about volunteering, and crowdfunding is about donating money, or as he said, there's going to be a stock, the equity-based crowdfunding is going to be next year. So appreciate his expertise. We're going to shift gears now and go to entertainment, because Legally Blonde is opening this Friday, July 19th. We wanted to help get that word out. And so we're going to be speaking with the director, Tiffany Engen, and we're going to get her on the line right now.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, Tiffany. This is Maria Sanchez, and you're live on the program. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Legally Blonde is opening this Friday, July 19th, at the Civics Arts Plaza in Thousand Oaks, and we wanted to make sure that we got the word out about the production. What can you tell us about it that is going to whet our appetites, Tiffany?
Well, the show is a high-energy juggernaut from the first downbeat on. We've assembled an amazing cast here for Cabrillo, and I think the thing that's most exciting for me, and I think for Cabrillo Music Theater as well, is that we are actually doing the original Broadway choreography and musical staging. That was done by Jerry Mitchell, who just won another Tony Award. So
really?
it's been really exciting to get to share the original choreography and a lot of the, you know, inside scoop of what this show was about from its Broadway days. And I also was on the first Broadway First National Tour with this show. So my love for this show is just, you know, one of the things that I love sharing the most, because it's super exciting. It is so smart. It is so beautifully written. And to be able to share it with this new group of actors has been really exciting.
Now, how long is it running?
It is running until the 28th, July 19th to the 28th.
And can you share with our listeners a production that is happening at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza? What does that mean in terms of the talent that is performing in it?
Well, the talent is all local talent. So there are a lot of actors from the Thousand Oaks area that have done shows at Cabrillo before or surrounding theaters. There's also a lot of new cast members this year that we found from other areas in California that have just come out to audition for this show because they love the show, want to be a part of it. They certainly wanted the opportunity to learn the original choreography. We had almost over 500 actors come and audition for this particular show.
Oh boy.
So it was a huge turnout. It's a huge draw because people just really love this show. It's a challenge. It's contemporary. Like I said before, the music and lyrics are, you know, amazing and super, super smart, super quick, super witty. And so the opportunity for these actors to get a chance to do this production at such a beautiful theater in a beautiful space with these amazing sets and costumes was a big draw.
Now, does that travel with it, the costumes, or are they created for this particular production?
They're created for this. All the shows that are done at Cabrillo are built from the ground up. So you're not getting some, version of a tour that once passed through. It really is. We take new actors, we take local actors, and we build this show from the ground up. So that's also been one of the coolest things, I think, that Cabrillo does.
And tell us about your career, Tiffany. How did you find yourself that this is what you're doing in life?
Well, I was actually a part of the Broadway production of Legally Blonde. I did the Broadway thing in New York, and I also toured with the Broadway First National Tour of the show. I played Serena, who's the bend and snap girl, the UCLA cheerleader, one of Elle's best friends. And I actually recently, have been spending more time out in Los Angeles doing more theater work, more TV and film work. And so this was my first introduction to Cabrillo, and I've seen some of their productions since being in California, and I'm just so impressed with the caliber of the actors and the caliber of the productions. It really is a truly unique and special theater experience.
And if people don't know, we like to call the Cabrillo Music Theater Broadway in your backyard. And if you're living here in Southern California, it's worth making the trip and coming and spending the night and taking advantage of it. It is a jewel. And I guess it's really the only theater of note between Los Angeles and San Francisco as well.
Yeah.
On the coast.
Really is. Yeah.
Do you know anything about ticket prices and how they're, where to get them and that sort of thing, details?
I don't know all the specific details, but certainly check out Cabrillo Music Theater, their website. They have all the information right there as to how to get seats and, of course, future membership and ticket prices and all kinds of other special events that they do throughout the year and ways that they're involved in the community and encouraging, the arts in their local area, from children all the way up to seniors. So it's they have a lot of information on their website, so I would say that's a good place to start.
So Tiffany, having been we used to say in front of and behind the camera, I don't know what you say, in front of and behind the curtain for live productions.
Sure.
What do you think, how is your career going to unfold or continue to unfold?
Well, I'm excited actually to be here on the West Coast, and things have been really rocking and rolling ever since I made the move. So I love the California television, film, and theater scene. It's so diverse. I think you can do a lot of really different things, whether it's, I just choreographed a music video for Laura Bell Bundy, which is out on CMT, on Country Music Television. I've been traveling doing, this theater stuff, definitely. The television and film community here in California is just booming, so the opportunity to have really diverse experiences is super exciting.
Well, good luck with everything. And
again,
Friday night is opening night, so you're doing previews now, I would imagine.
Yep, we're just finishing up our tech process, and then we will have a preview the night before our big opening. So it's looking really good. Everyone is super excited. It's such a fun show. It's great for all ages. It's definitely a contemporary show, but it is so smartly written that I think people of all ages really love it. And there's really something in it for everybody.
Do we have a dog?
Yes, we do have a dog. Bruiser Woods is played by a rescue chihuahua named Frankie.
Aww.
And he was on the national tour as well. He's actually done more productions of Legally Blonde than any other performer, whether they have, you know, four-legged performers or two-legged performers.
Oh.
And he is, I mean, it'll melt your heart. It's always the high point of the show. He's beyond adorable.
Well, so I look forward to seeing that.
If nothing else, come and see Bruiser Woods. it's not to be missed.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to it, Tiffany. And thank you for taking the time, and continued success, and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Tiffany. Tiffany Engen is the director, and again, it's Cabrillo Music Theater's production of Legally Blonde. It's opening this Friday, July 19th. It runs through the 28th. I haven't even seen the movies. My daughter has probably seen them. I don't know. I'm going to say 100 times, but whatever. So I hope to be able to take her with me because she would appreciate it more than anything. I happen to love musical theater, so I don't know that I've ever been disappointed when I've been to the theater, but it'll be a good time. So again, if you have an event or something that you would like us to help promote, and or a topic or a guest, please let us know. By the way, later in this week, we have State Senator Fran Pavley visiting with us. She's going to be talking about her legislation that survived with the hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, as they call it. So she's going to be visiting with us later this week. Tomorrow, we have a gal who's expert on manners and etiquette is going to be visiting with us, as well as a guest who's going to be speaking about strong women. Why are men turned off by them? And by strong, we don't mean bitchy or ballsy. We mean confident, successful, accomplished. And then later in the week, we also have a fellow visiting with us who is from China, and he's going to talk about Americans' stereotypes with Chinese people. So we have a full week ahead of us. So more good news story. We have time. Yay. So here is this gal. Emily Krause is her name. She is in Hershey, Pennsylvania. She's been a Dave Matthews fan since she was 9 years old, and she was on the way to see him at his show in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Along the way, there is a man who is stranded by the side of the road with his bicycle. It turns out that it was Dave Matthews. He had gone on a pre-show ride Saturday, and the back tire of his bike popped, and he didn't have a cell phone on him. So can you imagine? Let's talk about stuck. And so then Emily shows up, and she and her boyfriend were running late to the show, but she sees this guy pulled over, and she happened to have a bike rack on her car. I mean, all things. So they pulled over. They realized it was Dave Matthews. His broken bike got put onto her bike rack that she had just recently gotten from her parents. They had given her. She offered to take him to the concert. She did. Along the way, they chatted about the tour and things going on. And she said, we didn't know how to make conversation with him because she was so starstruck. So what a guy do Dave Matthews is, he invited the couple for dinner. Then he invited them backstage and then to seats in the front row for the show. And during the concert, he went through what had happened and referred to Emily by name. So she said, my cheeks still hurt from smiling, giggling, and laughing all night long. This will always be remembered, she wrote on Facebook Sunday morning. And she says when she woke up, she was wondering if it was a dream. Then she looked at the concert tickets that Dave Matthews had signed, and it said, thanks for the ride. And then she's like, okay, yeah, that really happened yesterday. It was surreal. We couldn't believe it. We have J.K. Rowling is in the news. She wrote a book called The Cuckoo's Calling under a pseudonym, Robert Galbraith. Her publisher, which is Mulholland Books, which is an imprint of Little Brown and Company, described the author as a former member of the Special Investigative Branch of the Royal Military Police. And here's his little dossier, if you will. He left the military in 2003 and has been working since then in the civilian security industry. The idea for the protagonist grew directly out of his own experiences and those of his military friends who returned to the civilian world. Robert Galbraith is a pseudonym. So, the Sunday Times yesterday was curious about who is this mystery novelist and connected the dots, noting that he used an agent, an editor, and a publisher who had also worked with Rowling. And so she got busted. She said, I'd hope to keep the secret a little bit longer because being Robert Galbraith has been such a liberating experience. It has been wonderful to publish without hype or expectation, and pure pleasure to get feedback from publishers and readers under a different name. The upside of being rumbled, I love the British terms, is that I can publicly thank my editor, David Shelley, who has been a true partner in crime, and all those people at Little Brown who have been working so hard on The Cuckoo's Calling without realizing that I wrote it, and the writers and reviewers, both in the newspapers and online, who have been so generous to the novel. And to those who have asked for a sequel, Robert fully intends to keep writing the series, although he will probably continue to turn down personal appearances. So when that happened, guess what? Sales of the book went up through the roof. On Amazon.com, the sales rose more than 500,000% after Rowling acknowledged being the author. We still have some other good news story, but I wanted to invite you to join us. Tomorrow is our girls' night. If you're in the area, the 50 Shades of Grey parody called Spank is opening tomorrow night, and we're having a girls' night. The bistro tables are already sold out, but there still is general admission tables. And if you mention the promo code Maria, you will get a 15% discount. Join us. That's also at the Civics Arts Plaza at the Small Theater in Thousand Oaks. Happy hour is at 6:30. The production is at 7:30, and then we have a meet and greet with the performers thereafter. So please, please join us. Thank you so much for visiting with us. We look forward to our broadcast tomorrow morning, and have a fabulous day. We'll see you mañana.
Talking, so call Maria. Her show is killer. You won't believe it, darling. There's long time listeners and first time callers. They love Maria, that's why they keep saying, and we're gonna get loud. But we're gonna get close. She's here and she's going. She's gonna help you figure it out. She'll give you some.